We played a circus game. I ran away and I joined the circus.
Welcome back.
Thank you. Wasn't all it was cracked up to be.
You are likely to be eaten.
You are likely to be eaten by a group. If this predicament seemed particularly cruel, consider whose fault it could be. Now the torture of a match in your inventory. You are likely to be eaten by a group. If this predicament seemed particularly cruel, consider whose fault it could be. Now the torture of a match in your inventory.
Oh, Carrington, we do you want to talk about all the mail we got from people?
Sure.
We got some lovely mail. I mean, I figured we should do that just do it first. And
I like it.
All right. I'm going to talk about some mail. Rick Reynolds wrote in. He said, "Hey, guys, loved the Zork 1 episode. Lots of great memories of playing that one. I cheated to finish it, but I did play it through back in the 80s. I'm guessing a friend of a friend must have had the info clues booklet for these games because I never saw them, but got lots of hints and suggestions from friends on how to solve puzzles in this game and a couple of others." I think that's probably a pretty common way to do it. Go to friends and go, "Hey, how do you get past the whatever?"
I would never cheat.
Or lie. You would never cheat or lie.
I would never do either of those things.
Some years back, I put together a pretty some years back I put together a pretty complete collection of all the Infocom games, all complete in box with feelies, etc. And he sent a link, and it's a beautiful— did you look at the picture?
I did. It dwarfs my collection just my collection of like all games, let alone just Infocom stuff.
Pretty beautiful. He said, "One more note about Zork 1. You guys probably know about the users group that Infocom ran for a while. They were the source of the InfoClues booklets. Anyway, they published two posters, one for Zork 1 and one for Zork 2, that are now pretty rare collectibles. They go for hundreds of dollars on eBay when they rarely show up. The last time I saw those posters on eBay, I contacted the buyer," I couldn't afford them, "and convinced him or her to scan them. I was then able to stitch together the small scan pieces into large printable versions that folks can now view." And he has links on his website, which will be linked in our show notes at monsterfeet.com/grew. And it's beautiful, beautiful, beautiful maps to a very difficult game. Anyway, so thank you very much for that, Rick. Very cool.
I was very impressed. I was very impressed, yeah, actually, with our feedback in general. We got a lot of people who emailed us and sent us tweets, who tweeted at us, whatever the verb would be there. I'm always very surprised and touched that people will listen to a show, but then the fact that they take the time to write us stuff is amazing. We got a lot of stuff.
I appreciate that very much. And even for a first episode of a podcast, it normally, seems to, like, it sometimes takes some time to get up to speed and, you know, get noticed. But we got a lot of feedback right from the beginning, so that was cool.
Yeah, I really appreciate it. One of my favorites was by our buddy Rob from Player Missile, because he had asked us to suggest a first game, because we had talked about with Zork 1 that both of us agreed, great game, don't make it your first game. And his question was, like, what would you suggest if somebody wanted to play an Infocom game, hadn't played one before?
Well, he said his first one was his first text adventure was Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, which is an even worse place to start than Zork.
Crazy. So basically, if you can do that, you can do any of them. Don't worry about it. But for most people, I generally suggest one of the ones that's labeled as introduction. I think I suggested Moon Mist in particular, because that's one of the few that I've played that is the easier rated ones, and I quite liked it. So that's usually my go-to suggestion for somebody who wants to start on something.
Cool. Yeah. That's a good one. Let's see. Eric Jacobson said nine-year-old Eric wanted a King's Quest, but his father had some sort of disdain of computer graphics and decided that Zork would be his first game. his choice was a wise one. A few plays at Radio Shack showed me that Sierra deaths were swift and incomprehensible, unlike Zork deaths, right, which totally makes sense.
Oh, yeah, totally.
But the deaths in Zork, if not always fair, at least made sense. It didn't hurt. I was already a bookworm. And he goes on to say that he learned how to type because of it. Very well in his touch typing class because of Zork.
I've also often said that myself. I am old enough that in school I took a typing class. Like, so when I was in high school, there were computers. They existed. I had one, and there was computers in the school. And yet we were still in that period of time where they were still teaching typing. Like, typing was a class you could take. And I took typing with the FFF space. GG, like, just ridiculous. But because of that, I learned to love and embrace the home row. I became a touch typist. And that is one of the most important and best serving skills I learned in all of high school. It's remarkable the dividends that that class paid off.
No, I self-taught at the, you know, the keyboard of the TI-99 and the Apple IIc, and teaching myself didn't do anybody any favors. I can do it. I'm still a horribly inaccurate typist, and I'm not slow. I'm just bad. I don't know. It's good enough.
We've often said that he's not slow, but he's bad.
Yes. Put that on my tombstone.
The Kevin Savitt story.
Let's see what's next. We have another email from, oh, I like this one, from Cedric Boust.
Sure.
We'll call it that. Call him that. Wanted to drop you a note and let you know I love your podcast. It's not very often. Old farts like ourselves. Oh, there, we lost our G rating. Sorry.
Oh, man. Farts? We lose a G rating for farts? Wow, iTunes is harsh.
Well, we can say farts. Oh, great. I'm saying it all the time then. If old farts like ourselves can get together and discuss things like that changed our lives as kids and teenagers. I arrived on the video game scene a bit later than Zork, but not much after. I'm an old Apple II child myself and will never forget that my first contact with that wonderful machine was Mission Asteroid, which, if I believe Wikipedia, which was released in 1980. Needless to say, my 11-year-old self immediately fell in love with the potential of that platform. Well, that and programming. That pretty much set my career until today, a mix of programming and playing games. Excellent.
Totally excellent. And woohoo, call it to the Apple II.
That's right.
My favorite.
That's right. And then I'm not going to read them all, but I like this one from Chris Thayer, who said, I just listened to the first episode. Loved it. Well done. Please do spoil the games. He says, the thing is, I've always been fascinated by the old Infocom games and interactive fiction in general, but I'm too lazy and easily bored to actually play them myself. Says it's kind of weird. I like the idea of those games, but the games themselves, in practice, not so much, sadly. It's like, I like the idea of reading poetry, but I don't actually want to read poetry.
It makes me think what we should have done instead of this is do it as like a YouTube Let's Play, like an all-text Let's Play.
Oh, geez, yeah. It'd be like a three-week episode.
Oh, my goodness. I remember... I remember that email, but I also know that we got chastised multiple times, I think in email and Twitter, for accidentally spoiling stuff. And, well, we were pretty good last time, I think, about trying to push the spoilers to the second half, and I think we'll try to do better and keep doing that, keep the first half of the spoiler-free. I think we let slip about something that I had tried to not spoil it, but...
Yeah, I think it was me. I was just like, oh, I don't think this is a spoiler. And then I said a little thing that I really thought was innocuous, and people disagreed. So,
right. Well, we will learn.
Right. Yeah, we'll try to do better. And if we don't, I'm going to say we're going to try to do better. And but you know what? It's been 30 years since these games came out. So if you haven't had it spoiled yet, that's a miracle.
Yeah, and I do think it is important that in the second half of the shows, though, we do talk spoilery, because there's always going to be things about these games that I want to discuss, and I'm only going to be able to discuss them in a spoilery fashion. So there's always going to be spoilers, but we'll try to keep them past a spoiler fence.
Right. Yeah. So spoiler fence. I like that. And finally, a friend of the show, friend of ours, Ken Gagne, wrote in. He said he loved the first episode of the podcast. It was great. I grew up playing text adventures, but not Infocom games specifically. But it was fun to hear what I missed out on. And, of course, hearing your two voices from Antic and Retro Computing Roundtable combined in this unique way was lots of fun.
And Kansas Fest.
And Kansas Fest, yes. Yes, indeed.
We love Kansas Fest.
He asked if we listened to the podcast called New Games Plus. It also reviews old games. He says he likes their structure. They first introduce the game's genre, history, and context, then share their experiences with the game.
Seems like a lot of work.
It does. Yeah, all that research.
I think the two of us are way too lazy to have a fixed structure.
That's right. He said something. Oh, he said, if it but up to me, he would have named this show All the Feelies. Which, yeah, I agree. I'm glad it wasn't up to him.
I like it. Although we wouldn't have got our amazing theme song. Well, I guess we could have, but it wouldn't be as apt. Apt theme song.
Apt, yes. Apt get.
Oh, speaking of get, that's another one.
Yes.
We got a last time we talked about how I'm a take person and you're a get person, and the feedback we got among all platforms seems to be pretty unanimous that everyone in the world except me types get. But I've decided you're all wrong. So okay. I mean, yeah, I get it that I take it that get is shorter and it can be typed with one hand, and it's in the title of Get Lamp, the awesome Infocom documentary by Jason Scott, which I love very much. But on the other hand, you know, I got nothing, but you know, I still think I'm right and I'm not changing. So I'm staying as a take person.
Okay.
I'm a taker. Just ask anybody I've dated.
Yeah. All right. Should we move on? Ready to talk Ballyhoo?
I am ready to talk Ballyhoo. Do you know what a Ballyhoo is?
I looked it up.
Or what a Ballyhoo is?
The game. It was like a loud, exciting noise. Or something mm-hmm. like
yep. I've always used it as like a commotion, like a hubbub or a kerfuffle.
So there's a lot of those around you all the time.
There are. I hear the words kerfuffle and hubbub a lot. So, and I guess it's also... and I knew this, I kind of knew it, but I didn't know it. It's also a verb, means like an extravagant praise, like an advertising. So like to ballyhoo something. And I have heard the phrase oft ballyhooed. I just never really thought of it as it's also a verb. So it is both a verb and a noun and an Infocom game by a fellow who I think only did two of them, right? Jeff something, Jeff O'Neill.
Looks Jeff like
he
O'Neill.
Did this one and Nord and Burt. So he kind of came late to the Infocoming, it seems.
He started as a game tester at Infocom.
Ooh, worked his way up, huh?
And worked his way up.
Nice.
Yeah, to programmer. He did Nord and Burt couldn't make heads or tails out of it.
Ah, see, it's and not he, heads or tails or even it's Nord. It's head or tail. The title always bugged me. Sorry,
head
Jeff.
Or tail.
Haven't played the game, but the title bugs me.
That's one of the few that I have played. Ooh. And he also did Leather Goddesses of Phobos.
He did? I thought that was somebody else. Oh, you know what? I think a bunch of people contributed to that.
Okay.
But I think he was the, what are the Infocom people? The implementer of Ballyhoo and, you know, like the imp, as they call them. So like the main writer. So I think he was the implementer of just the two. And then a bunch of people did that scratch and sniff one.
Right.
I think. And yeah, people will write in by the hundreds and tell us we're wrong.
Do you have a copy of Ballyhoo?
I do. Well, okay. So the thing is... I thought I did. I was sure I did. I've played this one before. I mean, that's one of the reasons we picked it. I said, let's play one I've played. And I had distinct memories. I remembered holding the ticket. There's a ticket that comes as the feelies, and one of them. And I remember distinctly holding it in my hand. I could feel the construction paper. I was looking everywhere for it. I've got a bin full of my Infocom games. I looked in the bin. It was not in the bin. It's not so large that it could be hiding. So it was driving me crazy. And then I think I tweeted about it, or I posted someplace about how I'm going crazy trying to find my Infocom game. And somebody reminded me that probably the time I remember playing it was when I reviewed it for a podcast, 1 MHz, like 10 years ago. And of course, when I used to review things on there, then I would give away the box. So I did have it, and now a listener has it. So I had the box, but I no longer do. So instead, I played the Lost Treasures of Infocom version. I still have that for the Macintosh. So I played it on a LC4. 75, an old classic pizza box Mac, and I had the floppy disk version, and it was awesome. So I played it on that instead. It comes with photocopied feelies.
Excellent. Yeah, I played it on, again, the Atari 800 emulator on my Mac, but I used the Lost Treasures of Infocom on my phone as reference for the maps and the InvisiClues and the feelies.
Okay, so did you have to cheat? Because I had to cheat, and I blame the version. And I don't... I think we can talk about it still on this side of the spoiler fence. But there is an item in the box that comes as part of the feelies. There, in fact, you get a you get a program from the circus, the traveling circus that Time Forgot, and it includes a program. And a page of that program is not included in the Lost Treasures version, at least the version I have. So the Macintosh version doesn't include one of the pages, and one of those pages has a thing you need to know to complete the game, because now this is a game from 85, 86, something like that. So Infocom is well into the era where it's using the feelies both as a fun thing to get and like a reason you should buy it, but also a reason why you have to buy it, because in the feelies will be some information that is required player knowledge to solve some puzzles. And so they use it as digital rights management, as a copy protection scheme. And there's a piece of info you need from a page that is not included. And I got stumped for the longest time. So it made me cheat. It's not my fault. Well, I will also say I had already cheated before that for some other things, but there's one other, and I had to extra cheat. And so that's not my fault.
I had to cheat extensively. I started off so good. I was just like, I figured out a puzzle all by myself without anything. I was just like, oh, this is going to be easy. Zork was too hard. This one's going to be okay. And after that one puzzle, that was it. That's all I could do. But I did like how I had to use the feelies, which had to read the circus program that came with it, and had to know information, had to use information in that book in order to get through the game. I liked that a lot. Kind of made it all feel very cohesive to me. And yeah, I know it's copy protection, but great. You know, that's fine with me. I cheated hard.
Oh, I totally did as well. Yeah.
In fact, at one point, the InvisiClues, which were the official Infocom clues, were not helping me enough, and I had to go online and find a walkthrough and look at that, like gently look at it. I didn't like just read the whole thing, but I was like, find the part I needed in order to really find out how to move the story forward.
I don't mind this. I do. I actually kind of, I know it's just for copy protection, but I actually enjoy it when an object that you're given, like in this case, the ticket, there's a thing you have to do with the ticket. And if you've got the ticket, then you might know a thing. And if you don't have the ticket, you wouldn't know the thing. And so that's a way to stop copy protection or copying. But I still like it because I'm like holding my ticket and I'm then interacting in the game because of the ticket, and it makes it all the more real. So I actually enjoy those aspects, but those aspects suck if you don't get given the info. So that really bothered me. And there's some other places I had to cheat as well, like that I just found, like, just because of difficulty. And so I had to look things up because they're just very, very hard. Some other impressions I had were, it's a lot smaller game, like the map and like the game world than Zork 1, even though it's a much later game. It felt smaller in scope, although it had some very intricate puzzles that you have to use, like things found in one area and use them in another area and stuff. So there's a lot of that. But
the
in
map
general,
is definitely smaller. So do you like that?
Yeah, I do, because I can keep it all in my head. With Zork, I can mentally map like you do, other than the twisty little passages all alike. But this, I could imagine the circus by once I was a couple hundred moves in. When I wanted to go from one location to another, I didn't have to consult even my own map. I could just know, oh, go two up and two over, and I'll be there. So I like that. I can keep the world in my mind, and that's
fun. This may be, I didn't count them, but maybe 30 rooms, and I didn't even have to make a map. It was just all in my head, and I really like that, because it felt, I could just mentally map it, and if I want to go from place A to place B, just like east, north, you know, south, southwest, and boom, I'm there. So it's a small world that didn't feel overwhelming. And I like that all this story, all these puzzles occur within a tiny universe. You know, it's like I've played some really great one room text adventure games, and I like that. I mean, just kind of personally for me, and it's totally subjective, the smaller the world is, the better. And this one was small enough that I liked it.
And yet still has variety and still has like different sorts of places you're in. And yet they're all thematically linked. I completely agree. I thought it was a good world. It was also a well-described world. It has a very interesting tone to it because it's a circus game. So you think it would be bright and fun and cheerful, but it takes place after a circus so it's at the circus location, but the opening is when, okay, the circus is done. It describes how you're kind of disappointed by it and everybody's filing out. And that's when the game starts. So the whole thing takes place after hours in a kind of slightly seedy, slightly worn down circus. So it's very, I don't know. It's like a little dour, a little wistful. It's got a different sort of feeling to it than you would think from a circus game. But it's all of a sort. Like it all does feel like you are at this kind of circus. And so I like that the thematically everything's linked and everything takes place and the places you go make sense that would exist at a circus. Although it is also goes off into fantasy and it's a bit surreal and stuff. So there's that too, but I dig it. So I thought it was well described. Mm-hmm. I also like the fact that it breaks the fourth wall a lot. There's a bunch of times where it kind of refers to you as a player and as you do things and it's neat bits of humor, that I guess is this Jeff's style. And I dug it. I liked the fourth wall breaking a lot.
I think that I feel like we buried the lead on this. This game is funny. I LOL'd at this game several times right from the start. I really enjoyed that. It did not take itself too seriously. I mean, it was a circus. It's supposed to be, you know, a fun thing. But, I mean, there were just like little throwaway things that really made me just chuckle. For instance, I mean, at one point, you know, you're standing in line and I type, "Get out of line," and it's like you start ranting and raving and carrying on and creating a fuss, and yet it does no good. It's like, that's not what I meant. You know, that's not what I meant.
You know, that's not what I meant. But it does that. I remember there's a monkey on your back at one point, and it's like a literal monkey on your back.
I've been trying to deal with that problem for a long time, and I'm sorry.
But you know, I like it. There are fake deaths in this. The game will kill you and then say, like, JK, you're not dead. A few times I got fake killed by the game a couple times. And I thought that was really
happened to me once. I didn't get it when that happened. I mean, I felt like, why did that just happen? I felt like it kind of pulled me out of the story. And I didn't understand, like, why.
I was writing down my deaths, and I stopped at six. And yeah, this is the kind of circus where you hang out for the evening and die six times. So fun place to go. And of my six deaths, two of the sixth, my second and my fourth death looked like they were actually fake deaths. Like I do a thing, it kind of interprets me literally, and then says, "Oh, just kidding. That didn't actually happen."
I can't give
specifics on this side of it,
like, I understand.
Otherwise we'd give it away. But yeah, so it's funny. And the one time it kills me, I only find out I die because it'll say, "Do you want to like restore or restart?" And I type restore, and it goes, "Oh, not so fast." I'm like, what? And then I wait, and it goes, "Okay, well then,
we'll
reports of your demise were exaggerated or something." And like, I was like, okay now. So that was kind of funny. I like it.
I liked when I did die for real. It tells a little story about how you had to sell yourself to the circus, and it says, "And you were working as the human something," and it's like there's several different ones. Like one time I was the human corkscrew, and other times I was the human platypus.
Oh, I think I got those as well. I got the corkscrew and the platypus. I got a few different ones, and I really liked that as well. When I became the human croissant, because it sort of relates to the way in which you died. Like, were you skewered, or did you fall, or were you twisted, or what? And so I dug that a lot, and so lots of little funny things, and I like the use of language, like all the circus lingo is neat, and it's in the feelies, and it's also the way the non-player characters, you interact with them, and they use a lot of that. They'll say, "Hey, Rube," and call the detective a Johnny Tinplate and stuff, and I dug it. I liked the clown lingo. So that was fun.
Yeah, me too. Another thing that made me laugh was there's a thing in there about this way to the egress. Did you see that?
Yes, I did. And I kept insisting I want to go. And it's like, are you sure you can handle the egress, the dangerous egress?
Right. So it turns out, according to the I don't know if you read it in the InvisiClues, that was a real gag that P.T. Barnum did to get people. When the midway was overcrowded, there would be big signs that say "this way to the egress," and people would leave. Of course, egress is exit, and they would exit, and then they'd be out of the circus and have to pay again to get back in.
That's very funny. I did not see that in the InvisiClues, so I have learned something. Now, one thing I didn't like, so I agree, game's really funny. I like the setting. I like that it's different. I like that it's a mystery that you have to solve, so that's kind of cool. One thing I didn't like was I really didn't get what my motivation was. We talked about last time when we were dealing with Zork 1 that it was a little vague. I'm like, you know, why are you here? Why are you, you know, robbing this house or like collecting in it or whatever? Like, who owns the house and what are you doing? Yeah. And here, I found that even more was the case. Like, you're just playing a fellow, or in my case, I played it as a lady, and you're just hanging out at the end of a circus, and you overhear something, and then decide, I'm just going to solve a crime. Like, you don't go to the police or anything. Like, you just, like, why are you hanging out? Why? You have to sneak into a place to even overhear that there is a crime. So the very beginning of this, you're skulking around at the end of a circus and then overhear something about a crime and decide to solve it. Like, it's very strange motivation.
Yeah, I kind of agree, but not that strongly. I mean, it made it pretty clear to me at the very beginning, the very first paragraphs, it says that you have a secret, irrational desire to steal the spotlight, to defy death and to bask in the thunder of applause. So that kind of gives me a reason that this person might not leave the circus immediately. And then, at least for me, very early on, I wandered into the place where you learn the story, like what's happened, that someone's been kidnapped. And it kind of made sense to me that, okay, well, here's the game. You try to, you know, rescue the kidnapped person. So it all fell together for me in a way that made sense.
I totally did accept it, but I think maybe because we had just been talking about Zork 1 and motivations and stuff, and maybe it was on my mind. So, but it just, I kept thinking about that, thinking like, this is an odd motivation for me to be doing this. And like, why am I skulking around? What else do I have noticed? I was almost 100 moves in. I was over 90 moves before I got my first points. So it was like, took me a long time to do a thing that finally gave me 10 points. The game only, I think there's only like 20 things you get 10 points each for or something like that. Right, it took me a long time wandering around doing stuff where like none of this gives me any points. So finally I have points. I did finish it and I did get all 200. And but late in the game, I took a note that there's this point where I hit like 150 points. And then for the longest time, I didn't get points for a lot of things that I felt like I should get points. I would do a thing, I would clearly accomplish something, and you'd get no points. And it felt like, are you just stalling me? Like, it's like, so I feel like this game should have more than 200 points awarded, because there's a bunch of things you do that you get nothing for that are clearly puzzle-solving acts.
Interesting. I guess I didn't pay that close attention to how I got points through the course of the game. I also got all 200 points, and I successfully finished the game.
It's not a competition.
No, it's not.
Unless I win.
Right, I understand. You did not win.
Then it's not a competition. If I haven't won, it's not over.
I felt, and maybe this is just me in this kind of game, but I felt like I had trouble sometimes making the story move forward. And maybe this is related to your points thing, where you got stuck in the points. But I sometimes something clearly had to happen in order to move things along, and I wasn't getting it. You know, even after looking at the clues, I was missing something that was necessary to advance the story. And I felt stuck and frustrated by that sometimes.
Well, you have made a very interesting and important point. I've been reading about this game, and something I did not know is it is, in the world of Infocom, essentially, the game that introduces that idea. So it's the fourth of their mystery games. So there's Deadline and such before it. And the mystery games prior to this were sort of clockwork worlds. So it was like a ticking schedule, like the world and the actors and the murderer or whatever are doing their thing. And you have to know that between like this step and this step, you better be in that room to see them drop the gun or what have you. The world is just going to move on and you are an actor in it. And so that game, it's almost like you have to play it over and over and over again and use the knowledge from your past fail games to try to do better. You're like a ghost reliving your life until you get it right. But Ballyhoo is more like a series of story beats, and that they will come in rough order. And so, and each beat is set in motion by you as a player, because you've entered a location or you've often had to accomplish a predetermined task. And then it's more like the Truman Show. Everyone kind of waits for you to come in the room and then they start going. And that this introduced that way of doing it, that the, so like, instead of being a ghost is reliving the same story that moves on without you, you're in a world that basically halts and waits for you to find a trigger before it continues. And that method, this latter method, is kind of how most mystery and plot-based games are going forward. Like, it sort of introduced that idea. So while it wasn't a hugely successful game, and it seems to be not one of the more popular ones, it has a very important place in the canon, especially of Infocom games.
Very interesting.
Because I felt the same thing. And I often feel that in games, where you'll get to a point where you're waiting. It's like, oh, and it happens not just in Infocom games. I'll be playing like a Nintendo game or whatever. You get to a point where you can't do anything until finally you unlock that other key or coin or what have you.
Right.
That, and then off you go to the next part of the game. There's these pauses. And so this game definitely had a bunch of those. And I frequently be wandering around the circus thinking like, well, what do I do? And it's like everybody just waiting. Well, until he notices that scrap of paper, we're just going to stop our deal. So I found that really interesting. I saw a play, just reminding me of it, that took place in a high school a couple of years ago, or maybe last year, something like that. Sometime between one and many years ago. I saw a play. A friend of mine does theatrical costumes. And she did the costumes for this play. And it took place in a high school. There was a big high school, multiple levels, three stories, massive, massive high school with a big grounds that was shut down, no longer a school, but totally complete. All the gymnasium and the lockers and the rooms and the labs and everything, complete except for the students. It was going to be demolished. A theatrical company bought out the rights to stage a play in it for a short while. So you have a complete but abandoned high school. They wrote a play that took place in the 1950s of a murder mystery that happens at this high school.
Wow.
But it takes place, and all the actors are ghosts kind of reliving the day that this murder happened, and a bunch of other things happen too. There's affairs and battles, and a whole bunch of stuff happens, multiple plots interweaving with each other. And how the play worked was, instead of being you're sitting in an audience watching a play, you gather outside, are told that on this night in the 1956 or whatever, there was a murder and no one ever knew what happened. And then you just enter the school. Everyone's going about their school day doing stuff. And then at some point, like at 8:02, there's going to be a fight in this hallway. And there'll be people in, there's locker rooms and dressing rooms and stuff happening outside. And there is no way to see the entire play because the world is just happening. And you wander around and just follow people. And you'll just pick an actor and you just start to follow them. They'll go to their locker and they'll go downstairs. They go to the gym. They have an argument and break up with the girlfriend. And then they go upstairs and they cheat on a test. And so you can just, they'll enter rooms, have discussions. And then one person might stop and another person will start to talk and leave, and you think, well, do I stay here and watch this person, or should I go look at the person in the hallway? And it loops through like three times, and so you have a chance to follow different parts of the thread, but it will move on without you. You may never see the murder mystery in the play. And so I think earlier mystery games were kind of like that world, whereas Infocom or Ballyhoo is more like more traditional play. Like, it's like, okay, let's sit down, we'll watch, and you're going to see everything. And so it's just a different way to go. And it's probably the case that most people would prefer games where it does wait for you, because then you don't miss something important, I guess, was the whole point of that very long story.
Yeah, I think, there was one point where I was knocking on a door and silence answered back, and I didn't realize that it was waiting for, no one was going to answer that door until other stuff happened. It just wasn't time for someone to answer that door yet. And I thought I had ruined that door somehow. I had messed things up so that person wasn't ever going to answer that door. So I started the game over again needlessly and had to, you know, spend another hour getting back to where I was. And I finally get to the door and I knock on it. Silent answers back again. It's like, okay, no. So I guess Zork kind of made me, I mean, I had to restart Zork so many times that I was a little triggered about that. So I thought, oh, here we go again. But that was me this time. It was just not understanding kind of that this game, how it played.
That's a good point, because I think all the times I restarted were because I died, so I would restore my game. But I don't think there was a point where I had to go back to the beginning and start over because I had led myself into a position where the game seemed unwinnable.
Yeah.
Whereas I did that a lot with Zork, where I would realize, oh, wait, no, I screwed myself 900 turns ago. I better go back.
Yeah, yeah. About going back, you probably didn't have this problem. I don't know. Maybe you might have in the Lost Treasures. But this game, as it originally shipped for the Atari and Apple and such, didn't have the undo command. And this game came out in 1986, where the parser that they were generally shipping had undo. But for some reason, they didn't ship it with this version. So I did a lot more saving and restoring than I would have liked because
I never use undo. I forget that it's even a term in the parser.
Oh, no,
never.
It's like all
on
I use.
Any game ever do I use. I forget that it's even a thing. As soon as you said that, I'm like, oh, right, that's a word I can use. I can undo stuff.
Most of the time.
Yeah, I use again, G for like do it again. That's like my newfangled thing. I only started doing that relatively recently. Like wait, and then just type G, and I feel all like, oh, look at me, I'm so cool. I'm using shortcuts.
Yeah, G and Z for wait.
Yeah, and I always just type wait.
I want to mention just how 80s this game is. This game just struck me. I mean, it came out in 1986, but several of these things were just like made this almost like a period piece for me. There's a Ronald Reagan quote that comes up. If you try to do something ridiculous, the game says, there you go again, which is just was a Reagan thing from 1980s. There's a joke in there about Old Coke.
Oh, that one I spotted. I didn't get the Reagan one.
Yeah. As Canadian, that's allowed to not get that. But I mean, because I had to look it up. New Coke came out in April 85, and I think at this point, when this game was released, the what do they call it? The Coke, old Coke,
right? Coke Classic.
Coke Classic hadn't come out yet, so having a reference to someone selling Old Coke was, you know, clever for a minute, for a second. And there was also a reference that you could get to E.T. the Extraterrestrial. So,
did you get that one? The 80s. I did get that one, and I like the 80s. And that's when I also understood.
And the other thing is I thought was one of the first things I noticed about the game, and it kind of threw me for a minute, they use the word midget in this game, which is not a word we use anymore.
No, it is not. I found there was a few things that were kind of politically incorrect, and I was uncomfortable with the term midget. I was kind of uncomfortable a bit with the handling of the freaks in general, the existence of them, and then their handling. There's the Colonel Thumb or whatever, who's they refer to as midget. There's the fat lady, who's kind of funny that she's so big she takes up two locations in the game. So that's
neat. Love that.
I like that. But it was also she was a sad character. I did like the characters though. I found that the non-player characters you interact with, a lot of them had a character. Like they were different than each other, and so they weren't just all cookie cutter. And so I dug that. I thought it was a good use of non-player characters.
Right. Yeah, I kind of made a list of like the characters that I liked the most. And I thought it was good characters. And yeah, they were certainly they must have even then been walking a line because you're dealing with freaks, you know, with circus freaks. And there's another thing that happened that we can talk regarding dealing with one of the characters that I cannot talk about until we go into spoiler mode. But anyway, that's what I want to say about that.
Till we leap the fence. Before we leap the fence, though, I'd like I think we should get to the other side. I have things I want to say, too. I think we should, though, for those who are listening who are going to leave us once we go on through the spoiler gate, would you recommend this game to others?
I would. I thought this game was fun and funny. I prefer it to Zork. This is my favorite Infocom game that we've played so far.
The thing is, I feel the exact same way. I found it very funny, really entertaining. I liked it way better than I enjoyed Zork. So I wholeheartedly would recommend this. I thought it was terrific. And yet, online, this is a fairly maligned or forgotten Infocom game. It is just considered not one of the good ones. And so that just makes me think we've got a lot of great games to come. Because people who are super into Infocom don't seem to like this game that much. And I thought it was terrific.
I agree. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I liked the writing. I liked the humor. The puzzles were, although I wasn't good at them, I felt like they were solvable. I felt like there was not much that was unreasonable, unlike Zork, where I thought, like, that's just crazy. No one could possibly solve this. Like, yeah, these are solvable. Not by
me. I felt the same.
But by someone smarter than me.
Well, I felt the exact same because frequently I had to look up the solution to something. And then once I knew the solution, it seemed like a fair thing. I felt, oh, right. Somebody could get that. I just didn't for whatever reason.
My list
and I played it before.
Yeah, my list of unfair question mark was a lot shorter than it was for Zork. And the other thing I was wondering is, I wonder if as we do this, we're going to get better at the puzzles, at this kind of thinking. It's just like, you know, the first time you do a crossword puzzle, you're just like, wow, this is impossible. I could never do a crossword puzzle. And then once you do them, if you keep at them, then, you know, now you can knock, you know, after a while, you can knock out a New York Times Sunday crossword puzzle and, you know, in pen in 10 minutes, right? And I'm just wondering if Infocom puzzles is a skill that can be taught.
I'm going to predict that it is, and I guess we will know. Let's have this discussion again a year from now. Okay, right. We got another 10 of these under our belt. What do we think? Right. I bet you it is.
Good. All right, should we take Let's a running jump over the
yes.
spoiler fence?
Ding, ding, okay. ding. Here be spoilers. So if you haven't played the game yet, run off and play it. Remember, you were here in the podcast and then come back. Yeah,
you should go play the game. I recommend it. And yeah, stop listening now if you think you want to play this game because it's fun. And you won't hurt our feelings if you stop listening now.
I agree. So now on this side of the fence, I want to say it's a stinking radio. The ad for the radio station, that whole page is left out. And so you don't know the call numbers. You have to tune the radio to number whatever.
And classical station.
Exactly. And so I knew I had to do that. But unless you're going to, okay, guess a number from 0 to 9,000 or something. Like, how annoying. And what bugged me was not only is it not included – then, so I look at the Invisi clues, and the first clue is like, you know, pop, music and talk show stations on radio aren't worth listening to. And the second one, well, if you're lucky, there might be a cultural one. And the third one was something like, wasn't there a cultural station just advertised in the circus program? So then the fourth one, which should just tell you tune into like AM 1170 or whatever the heck it was, just says, oh, look in the circus program for the radio station and turn the dial to that frequency. I'm like, that.
Right.
Yeah. So if you haven't played this game and intend to and you're slicing spoilers anyway, just so you know, you need the ad for the radio because you can't find in game how to tune it in.
Right.
That was annoying. That really frustrated me.
In my version of Lost Treasures on my iPhone, it was there. It was the last page of
the Mac version. Now, I have an early Mac version, too, because it came on 5 floppy disks instead of – there was a CD version later. So maybe it's just in the earliest versions, but in my version, it's not there. I cheated a bunch of times. I had to cheat finding the cigarette case, which is in the lion stand, because I said something like, look at the stand, and then I said examine stand, but I didn't use search stand. And so – I'm like, come on, if I examine the stand, you don't find it? Please, examine should be searched, but it is not. That's one of those things where I suspect I will get better at. So, yeah, I didn't.
Maybe.
I didn't understand.
Well, before we get into the puzzles, the other thing I wanted to mention was that we were talking about the little person and we didn't like that. The other thing that initially turned me off about this game is one of the early puzzles involves fooling a blind man. And that troubled me. And you have to take the helium, the helium balloon, inhale the helium, and then talk to him in a high pitched voice, and he thinks you're someone else, and then you can get to where you need to go. And that, I was just like, wow, I don't like that. But way at the end of the game, it redeems itself because that guy is hip and he knows what's going on the whole time.
And yeah, in fact, you use him to solve a bunch of things, and that actually made me feel a little guilty because I felt bad kind of fooling him at the beginning a little bit, but later he's really nice and he helps you with stuff and you hand him things and like he's so useful, and I felt extra bad. I never felt not bad about it.
No, I didn't feel bad at all because at the very end he mentioned something like I don't remember the exact wording, but something like, who would have thought that what started with a balloon would get you to...
Oh, you know what? That's right. Never even occurred to me that tells you... Oh, I'm slow. Yeah, no wonder I couldn't solve these puzzles.
He was hip to what was going on the whole time.
He told me that he specifically says that we, and in fact, it jumped out at me as a weird kind of line. When you rush past him near at the end, he says, who would have thought something that started with a balloon would end like this? And never occurred to me that that's telling you that he understood it was you with the balloon. Wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, you were
I feel better now.
He was fooling you.
Okay, good. Excellent.
All right. It got dark in here. I need to turn on the light. I can't read my notes anymore. Say something interesting for a minute.
Everything I say is interesting. So the cheat that gets rid of Kevin is the turn off light cheat. That sends Kevin into darkness. He will not come back because he's just been eaten by a Gru. So, listener, it's just you and me. And I want to tell you about one of the things that I found funniest in this, which was Rimshaw the Incomparable. You're back.
I'm back.
I liked him.
Stop
because
talking about me.
You can try to compare him with things, and then he can't be compared because he is Rimshaw the Incomparable. And I dug that a lot.
I didn't. What do you mean? I don't know what you're talking about. I did not do that.
Well, because he was Rimshaw.
I made a list of all the characters, and I starred my favorite ones, and the two I liked most were the guard and Rimshaw.
So Rimshaw was great because he tries to tell you to relax in like the loudest way. I wrote down that he points in front of you. The hypnotist points both of his hands, high tension fingers at you, and commands, "Relax!" Like in all caps. And that's like the best way to hypnotize you. I totally love it. And after he reads your head, he reads your future, and at the end of it, he slaps you on the head, and he was awesome.
Yeah. He's also the guy who recommended another Infocom game to me.
Me too. He recommended Enchanter. I wanted to ask you if you got the same name. The same game.
I got it. I got Enchanter.
Oh, I see. I was hoping it was always going to be a different one.
No, that'd be fine. Yeah. So tell me about the comparing thing. I totally missed
it. Well, he's Rimshaw the Incomparable. So when you look, I don't know if it's in the game, but when I was looking through something, he's got InvisiClues dedicated to him. Like, have you compared him to this or whatever? And it says you can't because he's Rimshaw the Incomparable. And it just made me laugh. One thing I didn't get at the beginning, because not being an American, is though I found it very funny, very early on, you're in a certain location and it'll say, President William Howard Taft is here. Well, that's very strange. And it's just because he's a cutout. And I guess if you know your U.S. presidents, you're supposed to know that he's a very large man. And so you think, hey, I can hide behind that cutout. But I didn't know that Howard Taft was notoriously massive, or William
Taft. No, neither did I.
I assumed all you Americans would know this.
My presidential knowledge for this game ended at there you go again, the Ronald Reagan quote. So, no, I didn't know that. But I figured, okay, it was a cardboard cutout, and then hide behind it, and things happen.
Right. So my deaths, because I was writing down my deaths, my fake ones, I was killed by the straw in the gorilla cage, because I looked in the cage, and then it says there's a bunch of straw, so I said, take straw, and it says, so you're taking a basket weaving, and I'm like, yes, and if you answer yes, it goes, okay, that's the last straw, and then it kills you, but then it says, oh, no, it wasn't quite the last straw, like, you can resume the play, so I thought that was very funny, so if you make a joke, it'll kill you for it, and then another fake one when I was climbing down from the tent, go up to, and I was recording the radio station after having cheated to find out where it was, and it just tells you fall from the cage, and so I went to restore it. He goes, oh, not so fast, you suffered nothing more than injured pride, I think it said, and it's just like you move on from there. So that's when I think probably everybody dies or fake dies, so I thought those were pretty funny.
Yeah, the falling one happened to me, and like I said, it was okay. I just didn't get, like, why is this happening? I didn't see how that had anything to do with the game or anything. So it was all right.
Since it was my third fake death, maybe it didn't throw me as much. I was kind of used to the game now pretending to kill me.
Right. The thing, one of my notes is, where did the elephant go? And the monkey, for that matter. So I realized early on, or not too early on, but at some point in the game, is that you can leave the lion cage open, and the lions don't leave. And you can leave the gorilla cage open, and the gorilla doesn't leave. And at some point, the elephant runs away. Where does the elephant go? Just like, I mean, I realize, you know, it's, I don't know, I realize these are characters in a game, but it's just like, it just seemed to me weird that, like, you can leave the elephant cage open. I mean, the lion cage open, and they just stay. They stay in their little home. Fine. They don't wander off or anything.
That was a puzzle. Letting the elephant out so it tramples and it happens to take out that one fence that opens up an area for you. I found that's a little Deus Ex Machina. Like, oh, what a coincidence. So if I let out the, it'll happen to trample in a way that is a direction that is really good for me. So, right. I mean, I was okay with it. I'm okay with, but that was one of those, oh, it's a solution because we need it to be sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, the things that happen in the game are really, some of them are very linear. I mean, one thing really leads to another. And I made a list at one point where, I mean, you get the pole, which leads to getting the balloon, which leads to getting into the camp, which leads to sneaking under the canvas, which leads to getting the mouse trap, which leads to getting the mouse, which means leads to scaring the elephant and getting the elephant hole, which leads to getting on top of the trailer. I mean, all that stuff, all these puzzles kind of happen in a chain mm-hmm. link sort of fashion.
Which is another reason why you can be at a point in the game where it's waiting for you because you have to do this to proceed. And it's very different than Zork in that Zork has a bunch of scattered treasures that you can kind of, in a sense, go after in whatever order you want. Whereas here, there was a whole bunch of the game. Yeah, I agree that were these strings of puzzles that one would lead to the next.
Right.
I still dug it though. I still like those kind of puzzles. And a few of them I found, like I found it weird that you find the letter, the little scrap of paper, before you get the ransom note. I thought those should have been the opposite order. Like you get the ransom note, then you would find the scrap of paper to be compared to the note. Instead, you find a scrap of paper and just hang on to it, and hopefully later it's useful. So I found that kind of weird.
Yeah, that's kind of weird. I thought it was weird when I was figuring out the puzzle about trying to capture the mouse. It was odd to me that, and I think I did it with some hints from the clues booklet, but not an outright cheat. But I was just like, oh, I just need to go to a place where there's going to be a mouse. And so I went to the field. Like, here's a wide open grassy field. There's going to be mice here. No mice. And then I was like, oh, I'll go to the garbage pile under the bleachers. There's going to be mice there. No mice. And there's only mice in this one other room, the prop tent. And it's like, that was weird to me.
But that's where they put the trap.
Yeah. Well, since when do they leave things in the most useful place?
Okay, so did you put your hand on the trap, or did you set it off with the pole?
I put my hand on the trap.
I put my hand on the trap too, and I found that really funny. Like, that's neat that the game makes you swear. It's like, you know, once more with feeling, shout it out.
Yeah, but if you swear too hard, then it asks you to dial it back. It's like, hey, this is a G-rated game.
Yep.
So you have to, things like "ouch" and "darn" and. You
know. Yep, and I dug that a lot. Like, that's another one of those breaking the fourth wall things that I really enjoyed. Like, I found that funny and different than most games. So I dug that a lot. But yes, I too, it's like a little piece of wood. I'm like, I shall pick it up. Okay.
Right.
And I remembered, I think I had to cheat a little less than I would have otherwise, only because I played this game, like, you know, 10 years ago or something. And so a lot of it was coming back to me. Before playing, I wouldn't have remembered all the details, but it's sort of like a song, you remember the lyrics as they're coming up. Same thing would happen here. I'd be like, oh, right, I've got to go to the lions and get that, or I've got to use this. And so when I saw the piece of wood, I knew what it was, but I grabbed it anyway. Whereas the first time, I think I just simply picked it up because that's what, why would I think it's a piece of wood? I should hit it with a pole. I still was enjoying it. And the very end, where you're up on the tightrope and you're playing the music, and then suddenly the music stops because they're waiting for another person to give money to the radio station.
Or they're doing a pledge drive, right?
I think that's fantastic. It cracked me up the first time. It cracked me up now. That is an amazing bit of writing because it's this great tense moment where you've cornered the monkey up there and pledge drive. And that's just, I think that's wonderful. I love that bit.
Yeah, it was really good. And it's just, it's a game and you're the guy who has to do this, but it's just like ridiculous to me in this world that you're the only person who can go make the phone call.
Yeah, you can't just shut down and tell someone else to do it. No, you've got to go all the way down, go across the circus, make a call, come all the way back, climb back up. I love it though. I think it's really, really funny. I also think the hypnotism is really neat. How you get hypnotized and you go off to like another part of the map, and it's kind of like, you know, a maze or like a twist, because they're all sort of the same, but it's just, it's smaller, it seems fair. It's not, if you go east you can't go back because like the crowd blocks you, but it's not that you're twisting. So I found it like a fair sort of maze, unlike the mazes that you get in Zork. And I dug it, and I like how you go into a hypnotized world, but then that lets you get a thing. I think it was the What do you get? The ice cream granola bar. You get the granola bar that you, it really it's you remembering from the granola bar from the day before. But it's a neat thing. Like, I thought that was a really interesting part of the game where you go off to a surreal world and you come back and that reminds you. Now you can search the trash and find a granola bar because you remember it from the day before.
Right. I thought that was terrific. Like that. That was very clever. I thought what was going to happen was that once you came to back into the present, that the granola bar was just going to be in my inventory. Right. But
it's better that you remember it. You remember where it got thrown to.
Yes, you remember where it went. No, yeah. That was very clever, and that was cool. What did you think about the blackjack?
I thought it was okay. I liked the bit about getting tapped on the foot because it gets used later, and I liked that the game would have a few things where it would bring up a thing, and then later in the game, it's sort of like a callback later in a movie, and so I dug that. I didn't have a problem with it. Did you have a problem with the playing blackjack?
I felt within the context of the story, the idea of a hidden room for playing blackjack at the circus seemed very strange, and was just like dealers just like hanging out waiting for people. I don't know. That just seemed odd to me.
Well, I thought it was not for the public. I thought it was the staff, like the clowns playing blackjack.
Right. That's what I thought too. And so that just seemed, I don't know, it just seemed weird. But then you can earn money and you could play blackjack all day, but you don't need money in this game, really. And it's just like a kind of a side, it's like a mini game, really.
Only need money, I think, when you buy the thing when you're hypnotized.
Right.
But you always have that money. In fact, I think you have to, you're going to have that money because you'll be hypnotized before you go to the blackjack. So you're never going to lose your hypnotized money. It's funny because in the manual for this, in the program for the circus, it talks a lot about stuff you can buy. In fact, I've got the little cheat thing here. It talks about how you can go to Clown Alley and get a makeup kit, yours for $4.50 at any one of the many toy and treat things, and buy a chocolate-covered banana for $2.25, and why don't you get a monkey on a stick for just $3.75? So it's funny how the advertising for the game, the feelies, seem to really imply there's a lot of things to buy and you're going to need money. And then there's a thing in the game where you can play to try to earn money. So, but for something told me, I think I already either knew it already or was in one of the clues that told you you're not going to need money. So I wasn't stressed about trying to play blackjack a bunch. I just played like two hands or something and said, okay, I'm done.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. I was annoyed by it, but now that I've mentioned, thinking about it as a mini game, that makes it better for me somehow. So I just felt like it was unnecessary, but maybe that's the point.
My overall impression was, though, that I found the game funny. I liked it. The puzzles were very hard, but fair, at least fair in retrospect. I liked the variety. I loved the ending. I laughed a bunch during it. I found it was a neat combination of circus and humor with a wistful, dour, rundown kind of atmosphere. So that was a neat thing. I liked the breaking of the fourth wall a lot. I didn't really like the non-PC stuff. Like, some of the game made me feel uncomfortable, but I don't know if maybe it was supposed to make you feel uncomfortable. Like, you never know. Like, was this, because this wasn't a game made in the 1920s. This was a game made in the 80s. Shouldn't we have already had a problem? But I don't know. The 80s was still 35 years ago, so maybe it just, we've moved on. I did notice you get your ticket and you have to punch a dot, a blue dot or a pink dot to say whether you're a boy or a girl, and that's another DRM thing to get to the turnstile. You can't use both dots. If you try to punch the second dot, I always try it, so we'll do both. And it tells you something like, hey, were you considering a career with the circus? I'm like, that is just, so you're just imposing the gender binary on me. Hey, how normative. And that's stuff that wouldn't have even occurred to me in the 80s. So that's something I know wouldn't have been a comment. It would have been just like, we assume everything's this. And I'm like, well, why can't I do both? Or not either. Can't I, like, what do you mean I can't punch both dots if I feel like it? So I punched the pink dot and I played as a girl, in not in protest much as just for variety.
I did the same. I normally, if given the option, I'll play as a girl because I'm playing real life as a boy, so, you know, might as well get variety in there. At one point, I felt like it barely referenced the gender, the sex of the player, except at one point it said something about, I think that the phrase was heaving bosom. It's like, you're heaving bosom. It's like, really? That's what we're going to use the sex for? So, yeah, that was weird.
I didn't even notice that one. I did notice that Rimshaw told me my future, a tall, handsome stranger will come into my life. And I wondered if that was what you get differently if you play as a boy. Because why can't a boy get a tall, handsome stranger?
That's true. That's true. So, and the other thing, the other note I made that I felt frustrated by, particularly frustrated by one puzzle when you're on the roof of the trailer and the way to get in is to basically reach down and knock on the door of the trailer.
I had to cheat because that seemed counterintuitive to me because...
Yes, because you're using something that's not in that room.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well put. It is kind of reaching into another room.
Right.
And I wouldn't think I could knock because I'm on the roof. There's not a door there. So you don't think knock
on
the door.
I mean, and you can, if you're in real life, you could reach down and you could knock on the door. So, okay, I get that. Fine. That's how you want to play it. And then later on, later on in the game, when you're in some other room or something, the person you're trying to rescue is, there's a hole in the wall and they're in the hole and the character's too big to get in there. And yet, at this point, you cannot reach into there. You can't yell into there. You can't reach. At this point, it's not letting you get into the next room. And I felt frustrated by that because just a little while before, the puzzle solving was requiring reaching into the next room.
So. That's interesting because that didn't occur to me. With the hole, you throw the midget in there, which is so on PC. It's like so bad. But I knew that was the solution to go get the Colonel Thumb and put him into the hole because he's helping you. But I don't know. I can't remember like 10 years ago when I first played this game, how did it affect me then? Now I simply knew the answer to the puzzle. So I didn't try reaching in. So I don't know what I tried at the time. Then again, I never looked for mice in the field. So you tried a lot of things I didn't try. But the knocking on the door bothered me. I agree. That's one of the puzzles I did not dig. But overall, I did like the puzzles. And I found the puzzles were interesting and difficult, but fair. I liked the game. I laughed at it. I would recommend it. I dig it. I'm very happy that I played this game.
Me too. Me too. Should we pick our next game?
Oh, we should absolutely pick our next game.
Excellent.
What's our next game?
How are we going to do that?
I want to play Trinity. What a coincidence.
Excellent.
I don't know. Cool. What is Trinity?
Trinity has
bombs or God?
Something to do with nuclear explosions.
Cool.
I read the back of the box, and it's something to do with atomic explosions, and they're learning how the A-bomb works, and somehow the explosions open rifts in time and space, and then it's some sort of time travel story.
I like everything that you've said, mister.
Excellent.
That sounds fantastic. In fact, I think this is one of the ones I have. So then I will play it as a real box. But if not, I will play it as a phony box.
Excellent.
Some form of box, real or fake, will be my key to this game. I love time travel stuff. Very, very much so. Do you know, is it one of the difficult ones or an easy one?
I think it's standard.
Okay. I can do standard.
It's not easy. No. Yeah, I think it's... I can't do standard. That's become clear to me.
Oh, no, sure. No, I mean, I can cheat my way through any of them, but the level of cheating will be maybe somewhat less. Excellent. Sure. I'm very much looking forward to playing Trinity.
Good.
Well, let's see that. So, dear listener, write in or tweet to us and tell us about your experiences with Trinity or Ballyhoo or Zork or whatever. You know you like to talk to us, and it's awesome because Kevin writes back to your email, and I just read them, and I love it. So if you want to, you can give us some feedback, grew@monsterfeet.com, or hit us up on Twitter. He is @KevinSavitz. I'm @Carrington, and we love to chat, and we love to podcast. So hopefully you will join us in a month or so, and we will talk about Trinity.
Thank Bye. You for podcasting with me, Carrington.
And you too, Kevin. I will talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye.
Oh, no. You have walked into the slavering fangs of a lurking Gru.
You are likely to be eaten by a clown.
Yeah. Ah.